Hello everyone, it's Chris Hall here from Charity Digital, the organisation that helps other charities be more digital. Today, we have a special podcast for you. In March, we had over 400 charity professionals join us at Olympia London for a day of learning, knowledge sharing and connecting. We managed to record all of the 22 sessions from the day, and we'll be releasing them as bonus podcasts throughout the series to help share some of the amazing conversations we were having on the day. If you want to keep up to date with all our upcoming podcasts and events, like and subscribe the podcast through your usual podcast provider and sign up for Charity Digital updates at charitydigital.org.uk. Enjoy the pod.
Welcome, everyone. I'm delighted to welcome you all to this, what I'm sure will be a fantastic session about embedding cybersecurity in strategic decision making. Delighted to have here today a gentleman who I've worked with many times before, not least on the Charity Digital Code of Practice, when he and his team were incredibly helpful. This is Cub Llewellyn Davies, who's the voluntary sector lead at the National Cybersecurity Centre, or as I like to call him, the James Bond of cybersecurity. So we will be hearing some fantastic insights from him today about how you can use cybersecurity in making better decisions about where your organisation is going, and of course how you can manage those all-important risks and also how to prioritise some of those risks as well. So Cub, over to you. We'll be hearing from Cub for about half an hour, and then we'd be delighted to hear your question. So can we please give Cub a very warm round of applause?
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here, not least because I've just achieved a lifelong goal, being given a Madonna microphone. I've had lapel microphones before, but I've never had one of these. It's brilliant. I won't start dancing or singing. You'll be pleased today. As Zoe said, my name's Cub. I'm the voluntary sector lead for NCSC. A little bit about the National Cybersecurity Centre, for those of you that haven't been to one of the webinars or been to one of these sessions before. We're a government agency. We're responsible for the cybersecurity of the UK. It's quite a broad remit that we have, but primarily that means being here, giving advice to organisations, to individuals, the public sector, the private sector, and of course the voluntary sector. We don't sell any services. We're a government agency. We can't really sell anything. But today's session is obviously going to be on the thrillingly entitled Embedding Cybersecurity in Strategic Decision Making. I couldn't come up with anything more catchy, I'm afraid. But that's what we're going to be looking at today. I'm going to start at the beginning and introduce where all of this comes from. It comes from something called the Cybersecurity Toolkit for Boards. It's something that we published just under a year ago, because when I spoke at this conference last year, I was having to talk about it without actually mentioning the toolkit because we hadn't released it. But we're going to be looking at the topics within the board toolkit and going through them in a very quite quick way to cover it in half an hour. How to take strategic decision making in cybersecurity is quite a tall order. But I'm going to go through the various topics of the board toolkit and how you can embed them in your organization. So the first bit of all of this is getting the information that you need to make informed decisions on the risks that you face. From there, we're going to move on to using that information to prioritize and evaluate those risks, and from there, taking steps to manage those risks. But before we go into those three kind of phases, there's one bit that we've got to get right first, and this is often something that a lot of organizations, both in the private sector and in the voluntary sector, skip over, and that's getting the environment right. And by that, I don't mean the technical environment at all. What I actually mean is getting the environment within your organization right to start taking a better approach to cybersecurity. So it starts off with embedding cybersecurity in your organization. Very quick hands up, who here knows who their board member responsible for cybersecurity is in their organization? It's not an awful lot of you, probably about, I can count about 10 hands going up. That's really where we want to start when it comes to embedding cybersecurity in your organization. The board, because cybersecurity is a risk, has an ultimate responsibility for it. Therefore, they need to understand that they have responsibility for it and have not just a person, but an approach as a board to cybersecurity and how they want to tackle it. It unfortunately quite often gets seen as something that someone will go, right, we should get this on our risk register. Great, it's on our risk register. there we go, we've done that. That's a risk, managed, mitigated, etc. Unfortunately, that doesn't quite go far enough. So we've got to start by embedding it, and the board needs to kind of assign responsibility for cybersecurity, decide what their approach is going to be. We'll come on to that in a second. From there, it needs to begin to form part of other processes. So where you're moving to, say, new digital services, kind of anything realistically new in the digital world, whoever is responsible for cybersecurity in your organization needs to be involved in that from the start. The story we often hear about cybersecurity is they're the people that turn up in the last 60 seconds of a project, turn around and go, no, you can't do any of that because it's not secure. Unfortunately, that's normally because they weren't there from the beginning. Cybersecurity isn't really a blocker. It's just that a lot of people don't consider it from the start, and therefore it becomes a blocker later on in the project. To be able to embed it properly, you've probably got to grow your expertise within the organization. A lot of organizations, particularly in the voluntary sector, you don't have an infinite resource of money and people, and therefore you're not going to have, you know, hundreds of staff or volunteers responsible for cybersecurity or with particularly significant skills in cybersecurity potentially. As a result, we've got to start by growing that cybersecurity expertise. Now, there are bits that you can buy in, whether that's consultancy, whether it's bringing in new staff, or just bringing up the skills of the existing staff that you've got. Before that, though, you've got to really understand what your skills gap is, and that comes from deciding this next bit, which is around the culture that you want in your organization. Within your organization, a lot of, and it's quite a historical kind of approach to it, there's an attitude towards cybersecurity, that someone who clicks a link in an email, someone who downloads that dodgy attachment is somehow wrong. And a while ago, where it was really easy to spot a phishing email, that was probably a sensible approach. We're moving away from that now into a world where we have a slightly more positive approach. So I went to a conference a little while ago, just by way of a sort of anecdote to support this. And a lot of organizations now do simulated phishing, so where you put out a phishing attack that's not a real one, but it's sent out by yourselves. And the idea is to test how many people click on it, how many people then put their details into an online form, things like that. And someone put their hand up and said, yep, we did a simulated phishing. And about 20% of our staff clicked on the link. And we thought, okay, well, that's not bad. So I said, well, what did you do with that 20% of your staff that clicked on the link? He said, well, I got them into a room not that dissimilar to this, and I yelled at them for 20 minutes about why what they're doing is wrong, and they've put the organization at risk, and all of these things. And said, you know, if you do it again, then that's it. You're going on a formal warning or disciplinary or whatever it might be. And then the question comes, well, actually, if you do that, do you really think they're going to tell you again if they click on a link in an email? Probably not. What you've done is made cybersecurity something scary, something they have to do, something that really isn't a positive part of their workday. Let's be honest now, phishing emails, things like that, are getting much harder to spot. They're no longer a prince from a faraway land offering an inheritance from someone you've never heard of and that is suddenly going to give you £100,000. It's not like that. They are realistic. They imitate services that you have from things like Office 365. We see a lot of those. They're perhaps suppliers that you work with. The criminals have scoured social media and found out a lot of information about your organization. They're very hard to spot. Our technical director, a guy called Ian Levy, actually wrote a blog about the time he nearly fell for a phishing email. The only reason he didn't, and literally this is the only reason, was because the person the criminal was trying to pretend to be, and it was a prankster, not a real criminal, the person they were trying to pretend to be is a guy called Paul Chichester, another one of our directors. The only thing is, nobody calls him Paul. Everyone calls him Chich. The only person that calls him Paul is his mum. And so when he signed off the email, Paul, Ian went, well, hang on a second, this isn't right. Went back, looked at the email in a little bit more detail, looked at who it was really from, and realized it was a scam, turned out to be a prank. But it is really easy to fall through. We're trying to work quickly, people are just trying to get their job done. So developing that positive cybersecurity culture, and again, that comes from the board. The board and the senior leadership need to say, we are gonna take a no-blame approach to cybersecurity. If you click on an email, come tell IT, make sure they can do something about it. It is much better to know than to find out later on because someone was too afraid to tell you. The next bit that I said I'd move on to is getting the information that you need. This starts with knowing what your crown jewels are, as we call them. Every organization will have some crown jewels. They're the things that you care most about, the things that you really couldn't do without as an organization. For most of you, this is probably money, data, your website, if you're an externally facing charity, and potentially some of your operational technology. I don't know if any of you sort of deliver commission services or things like that, but perhaps you've got some operational technology around what you do that would form part of your crown jewels. You've got to understand what those crown jewels are before you go. You can't claim that everything is your crown jewels, because then you're simply trying to protect everything and it will become unrealistic very quickly. But identifying what those are, and again, this comes from your board. When it comes to actually going on to protect something, if you don't understand what those crown jewels are, it is going to be very difficult to focus the very limited resource that you've got on actually protecting the things that matter the most. Once you've established what those crown jewels are, you need to understand where the cybersecurity is at the moment. And you'll notice as we go through this, I haven't actually said anything particularly technical so far, and there's a reason for that, which I'll come on to later. Establish what that cybersecurity baseline is. Most organizations will have been doing something around cybersecurity for quite a long time. If you haven't done anything, please have a look at the small charity guide, which is available on our stand that is in all of your packs today. But establish what your cybersecurity baseline is. Where do you stand when it comes to email security? Do you have multi-factor authentication turned on already? Do you have corporate systems set up for your IT devices? What are the controls on them? Where are your firewalls? Things like that. Understand actually where it is that you're starting from and how well you're protecting those crown jewels as it is. From there, you can then begin to identify kind of controls and measures that will protect those crown jewels a little bit better. Before you actually go on to any of the measures, though, you need to understand the cyber threat. So about 2 years ago, NCSC published our threat assessment into the charity sector. It effectively found that charities are falling victim to cyber attacks. They are falling victim in the same way as businesses, local authorities, central government. And it's for a number of pretty clear reasons. First off, charities have money and charities have data. Those things have a value to criminals. Someone actually at a conference recently referred to data as being the new oil. I don't know if that's quite true. I think probably gold is a better kind of analogy. But it has a value. As a result, criminals who think of cyber attacks as a career path, might not be a very good one, it's not a very honest one, but nevertheless a career path, can make some money off it. There's an example I often use, which isn't charity specific, but it gives you an example of how easy cyber attacks are becoming. I went to a conference in the Northeast, a fraud conference, and the regional organized crime unit were there. They brought with them a criminal. We'll call this criminal Carl for today. Carl had been convicted of Computer Misuse Act and fraud offences. And as part of his probation, he was now being taken around the country by the regional organized crime unit, talking about the crimes that he'd done and effectively repenting for them. I did feel slightly sorry for him, but nevertheless. Carl, by his own admission, had never had any IT training. He'd not gone to university. He didn't have a computer science degree, any of those sorts of things. What he'd done was a friend had showed him a website where he could buy stolen lists of usernames and passwords. And the reason that matters is a lot of people, and I won't ask you to put your hands up if you do this, use the same password for multiple online accounts. It is very common. Almost everyone does it. But what it means is if one of your accounts or one of your username and passwords is stolen or a list of data is stolen from one of the people that you are registered with, it's very easy for someone to use that on another website. So he bought these lists of emails and passwords. He would then take that list that he bought, put them into loyalty card websites, run the email and password, hope that it worked. A lot of them obviously don't, but the few that did, he got in, and he turned them into vouchers. So he'd turn your club card or your Nectar or your whatever points it might be into a voucher. He'd then sell that voucher for slightly less than face value on eBay or Gumtree or any of those kind of other websites. And unfortunately, you've lost all of the value of your points and he's made a little bit of money off it. Over time, he then bought a piece of software that automated that for him, and he could run lots more. In the 9 months that he was doing this, he allegedly made £150,000. This is a guy who, 9 to 5, works in a warehouse stacking shelves, earning a little bit more than minimum wage, goes home, spends a couple of hours every evening running usernames and passwords, makes £150,000, allegedly. The really embarrassing thing was when the police got the tip off about this, he was only 4 doors down from the local police station, so they didn't have to go very far to knock his door down. The reason I'm telling you that is because the cybersecurity threat, we hear a lot in movies and things like that about guys in hoodies who you're never going to catch them, they see the Matrix in front of their eyes and things like that. That is movies, it's not real. A lot of these people are literally going for the cheapest, easiest way to lay their hands on money or data. And unfortunately, the less protected organisations, therefore, are the much easier targets. So just going back to the cybersecurity threat to charities specifically. So you've got your money and your data. Those have a financial value to criminals. There are some other ones, if you read the threat assessment in full, around hacktivists and nation states, but I'm not going to go into those in much detail today. The types of attacks we're seeing, there's two that I would just want to highlight. First off is business email compromise. So where generally people have clicked on a link in an email or entered their details, and someone has then taken over, got into that person's email account. So if you use cloud email, for example, Office 365 or Gmail or something like that, they've got into that email account, they've set up auto-forwarding rules, and they're watching stuff come out of your inbox. What they're looking for, and they typically go after someone, say, in the finance team or someone externally facing, they're looking for an invoice or something that they can change the details on. They'll change the bank details and see if they can get it paid to their account. It might sound like, well, obviously that's going to get caught. It doesn't. I've had 3 people come up to me in the time that I've just been standing at the stand out there and said, yep, we've fallen for one of those business email compromises and we've transferred £10,000, £50,000, £100,000 out of our own accounts into the hands of criminals. We're seeing an awful lot of those. There's an advisory on our website about exactly that related to Office 365. So we're seeing those. That doesn't sound overly cybery. It's very easy to do. All you need is a laptop and to know someone's email address. But there are some really simple controls around putting two-factor authentication on cloud email accounts that will help protect it. The other of which is ransomware. If you kind of follow the news around cybersecurity, you'll see that ransomware is an increasing trend. Ransomware, for those that aren't too familiar with it, effectively is a piece of malicious software. It gets onto your device or your corporate network, it locks it down, and then you get this nice pop-up on the screen that says, we'll give you access back if you just pay us X amount of bitcoins or something like that. It is really difficult. I'll cover this in 2 ways. First off, the National Crime Agency says, don't pay the ransom. There is no guarantee you're going to get your data back. There's no guarantee they even have the decryption key, if there is one, and there's no guarantee it's going to work. Also, as charities, you need to be quite mindful of the fact that you're putting money into the hands of criminals. But there is some guidance on recovery on our website. The other side of it is it can be very easily defended if you've got decent offline backups, because they will not be ransomed. You just wipe the systems, reinstall from your backups. But that's kind of the cyber threat to charities. I definitely encourage you to have a look at the full threat assessment, see which bits apply to the type of organization that you are. It's on our website. All of the links will be at the end of this session. So that's the cyber threat to charities. You've then got to use this information, obviously. There's a bit of a confusing bit between compliance and security. Since GDPR came in, GDPR, we love it because it gave a real impetus to people taking security a little bit more seriously. Predominantly because there was a lot of attention around GDPR. I know when I started doing this back in 2017, everyone was talking about GDPR. Trying to get cybersecurity in there was very difficult. So we hung a lot of this off GDPR. The downside of that is a lot of people are very focused on compliance with the letter of whatever it might be. There's a little anecdote that goes around Cyber Essentials, which is our assurance scheme, certification scheme for your cybersecurity. It's a government-run one, where an organization, I think it was a a private sector company, got Cyber Essentials, and then didn't change anything for like 2 years. They didn't do any updates, they didn't change any of their systems. They're like, we have achieved compliance with Cyber Essentials, we now can't change anything until we next go for compliance. Unfortunately, as most of you will know, not doing any updates for 2 years puts you significantly at risk, and also means you're probably not going to have the most up-to-date systems for which to operate on. So there is a bit of a trade-off between compliance and security. To truly be secure, you've got to go that bit beyond compliance. Compliance is great in terms of pointing out the very minimum that we should all be doing, but it doesn't actually address the individual risks that your organization might be facing. So your board needs to understand which bits they need to be compliant with, and then the individual kind of approaches that you need to take with your data, with the way that your organization operates to make sure you're secure. What I'd really encourage you to do from a technical level is have a look at 10 steps to cybersecurity. It goes beyond compliance and actually looks at the individual steps that you need to take around security, not just compliance. From there, then got to integrate risk management processes. Quite often, the main aim of risk management is to reduce the levels so low that actually that's achieving some level of success within cybersecurity. Unfortunately, reducing your risk levels to zero or effectively zero shouldn't be the measure of success, partly because you could spend an awful lot of money focusing on an area where actually that's not, shouldn't be your focus. And be realistic about the risks. While our chief exec quite often goes around the country and the world saying, it's not about if we have a significant cyber attack in the UK, it's about when. Chances are within your organizations, the same probably should apply. It is not if we get targeted with a phishing email, with a ransomware, it's when. Being realistic just means that you understand what you're gonna do about it when it happens, and you're actually gonna take some action off the back of it. And that, I suppose, to a certain extent, you're prepared for that to happen and you have some sort of redundancy built in. And the final bit of those four is about managing those risks. So there is a reason I haven't said anything around actually what cybersecurity measures to put in place. There isn't a silver bullet when it comes to cybersecurity. There is no, these are the five things you should put in place in your organization. Instead, you've got to implement effective cybersecurity measures for your organization, for the way that you operate, for the size of organization that you have. Just as a bit of an example, quick hands up if your charity has an income of less than £1 million a year. Between 1 and 10 million, and over 10 million. So the reason I do that, the controls for an organization with an income of less than £1 million and the controls for an organization of an income over £10 million are ultimately gonna be very different. They're kind of a scaled version of themselves, but they're very different. What I would say here is the basics will still apply to everybody. So updates, having a sensible password policy, implementing two-factor authentication across all of your devices. As you get larger, making sure you have some way of identifying incidents as they arise, some sort of SIEM tool if you can get your hands on one. But putting in place effective cybersecurity measures and ones that are specifically targeted at the crown jewels that you're trying to protect is the best way to manage those risks. It is dependent on your size, though. The next bit is around working with suppliers and partners. Charities have, or are part of, a supply chain. Now, suppliers take a lot of different forms. It can be anything from the guys that provide your stationery, probably not a massive cybersecurity risk to your organization. The guys that provide your IT, probably a fairly significant cybersecurity risk. Through to HR systems, gift aid, all of those kind of much more integrated processes within your organization. As a result, you need a different approach to managing supply chain risk for all those different types of organizations. Another hands up, I promise there won't be too many more of these. Quick hands up if you've got specific cybersecurity questions in your supplier questionnaires. Couple, okay. So, the first step I would say in terms of working with your suppliers and partners is understand what their their cybersecurity is like. So what controls do they have in place? Do they have a certification like Cyber Essentials, ISO 27001, depending on what it is that they're providing to you? We often, supplier questionnaires and things like that have been used by procurement teams more so to avoid things like money laundering, making sure that the tax arrangements are all ticked off, things like that. Cybersecurity, because it is really critical to the way that you're going to share data, pay invoices, things like that, should also form part of that conversation. I would thoroughly encourage you to put some sort of questions in there. We've seen people go a little bit too far the other way, and they want to know everything about it. They're reserving the right to do various types of audits and things like that. Depends who that supplier is. But work with them, so understand what their cybersecurity is, but allow them also to understand how your cybersecurity is. The one thing that we see more and more common amongst between suppliers and your, the organization that they're supplying is that business email compromise that leads to a mandate fraud, so changing the bank details. Understand how you operate and agree a process by which that can happen. Chances are, the thing that is going to catch something like a mandate fraud from a business email compromise is somebody picking up the phone and ringing that supplier and going, just checking, you want us to change the bank details on this invoice. If the answer is yes, then great, that's real. If the answer was no, what the hell are you talking about? Stop everything you're doing, work out whose email account has been compromised if they managed to change that invoice, and go back and reset passwords and things like that. But working with those suppliers means that you're going to have a better relationship. We've seen it quite often where entire relationships are broken down because either the supplier or the person that they're supplying has suffered a cyber attack, and it's led to a loss by the other party. The last thing you want as charities is to start losing your reputation because you've suffered a supply chain attack. And the final bit of this section is planning for the worst to happen. Most organizations here probably have a plan for what to do in the event of coronavirus, flooding, fire, electrical outage, things like that. Last hands up in this room, I promise. Who here has a cybersecurity incident response plan? Who, keep your hand up if you've tested it in the last year. Ooh, two hands, good. So I guarantee you the way, the most common thing that is going to happen is you are going to lose some access to your IT systems. Having a plan for what to do in the event of that is really critical. Testing it even more so. The reason I say that is we spoke to one organization when we were testing something which I'll introduce to you in a second called Exercise in a Box. We spoke to them. Their plan was brilliant because what they were going to do was revert to WhatsApp as their operating system. And that might, as in their communication system between staff and things like that. That's actually not a bad shout. The problem was all of the numbers of everyone that was going to be involved in it was saved on a live document on the server. So if they suffered a ransomware or they had a massive cyber attack, there was absolutely no way anyone was going to get access to it. So if you're going to have a plan, have it accessible, have it in a way that you can get access to it. We've got a tool, and there is, if you go to our stand later on, there's a big banner with information all about it called Exercise in a Box. It's a free-to-use tool. It provides you with, I think, definitely 5, but soon to be 8 different tabletop exercises for planning for a cybersecurity incident. It ranges from phishing email that leads to a ransomware attack through to a supply chain attack. And there is also a technical simulation. So if you've got IT teams that want to have a go at actually finding some fake, I promise it isn't real malicious software, but you can drop it onto your networks and go hunting for it. So it covers all of the eventualities, and it literally covers everything from who should be in the room, facilitator notes, the facilitator does not need to be a cybersecurity expert, in fact it's better if they're not, through to how many pens, papers, post-it notes and flip charts and things like that that you need. So please do have a look at that. It's free to use. Anyone can sign up. And those exercises will be constantly updated as well to make sure they remain current. So all of this was a very whistle-stop tour through the board toolkit. It's broken down, just so you kind of understand how you can use the board toolkit. It's broken down into 3 sections, and it addresses 3 questions. What should the board do? So specific actions for your board to take in taking a more informed approach to cybersecurity. what should the organisation do? So at an operational level, whether that's in the IT team or just the person that's been given responsibility for cybersecurity. And what does good like? And what does good look like takes the form of questions. And these are questions for both the board and the organisational, the operational people to ask. And it might be something on the lines of, how do we control access to our data? And in terms of what good looked like, the things you should be hearing back are, we have a tiered access model to all of our data. So only the people who need access to certain bits of data have access to it. We have robust access management protocols, so passwords, two-factor authentication where it's appropriate, things like that. So it allows you to actually go through specific scenarios and ask yourselves questions around what good looks like. That's how the board toolkit can help. I would really, really encourage everybody to have a look at it. Go through, particularly start kind of at the beginning, go through what those crown jewels are, how you're protecting those at the moment, and begin to look at what your action plan is going to take. You cannot resolve cybersecurity overnight, and unfortunately, it continues to be a sort of live problem that will evolve. Just this week, we've put out more advisories for new things we're seeing. Criminals will always try and stay one step ahead of the defensive measures that we put in place, but by taking this kind of approach, it means that you can be a little bit more dynamic and keep up with the threat as it evolves. That's it of me talking at you. All of my contact details are there, but I'm very open and willing to kind of take any questions or thoughts.
So we've just recently rolled out Office 365.
Yeah.
And obviously one of the benefits of that is that people can access it on any device, which is really good from a collaboration point of view and so on. But we're not letting people do that on their personal devices currently because we haven't got a bring your own device policy. Do we need one?
Do you need to bring your own device
policy?
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that?
So first off, I think very sensible rolling out cloud. We would say as NCSC, consider the cloud first. So while we don't kind of advocate specific vendors, in terms of the concept of cloud, chances are it gives you a lot more ability to be intuitive and actually give a much better user experience for your staff, your volunteers, your trustees. So yes, definitely begin to move to the cloud if you're not already there. There are so many organizations in the room in the sort of conference hall today that can help you with that. In terms of bring your own device, the one thing that, as you say, cloud does open up is a better ability for people to do bring your own device. If you're gonna move there, yes, definitely you need a policy. And you need a fairly robust approach to what devices and what apps and things people can use to access your cloud services. So one of the things we've traditionally struggled with, and I think anyone here who works in the IT team will probably recognize this, the worst people for bring your own device are senior leadership and trustees. Chances are because if they're a trustee, they've got a day job, they're a trustee here, they might be a trustee somewhere else. They do not want four corporate devices on which to operate on. And that's where bring your own device becomes a big bonus, but also a potential sticking point for you because you don't have an awful lot of control over the device. Yes, you definitely need a policy. We're about to release momentarily, it may even be out already, I haven't checked this week, some bring your own device across two levels, so for really large organizations and for smaller organizations, because we're also kind of cognizant of the fact that bring your own device for some small organizations isn't bring your own device, it's bring the entire device that you're going to work on in terms of a corporate system. And that smaller organization one has that kind of focus, so it's where it's not a secondary device to your corporate device, it is your primary work device as well as your personal one. But I think increasingly, people want bring your own device. We don't want to have to carry it. I mean, I'm carrying two phones today. I've then got a laptop in my bag and an iPad. That is a lot of devices just to carry round to be my personal self and my work self. The idea would be to carry one device and it do everything for you. So I think, yes, bring your own device can be really, really good if it's executed properly. But yes, you definitely need a kind of decent policy and some sensible controls on who can do it and how you allow it access to your systems. Having that ability to shut it out as well is really important. So if you are experiencing a cyber attack, being able to shut out people's bring your own device access at the kind of flick of a switch or click of a button is really important as well. Yeah.
Just quickly, can I follow up with that? Where would you go to get advice on, you know, you talked about devices, and so I've been, you know, looking for sort of templates, if you like, to start, and I'm finding, you know, some that are really robust and listing operating systems and devices and apps, and I'm just not really sure where to start with what those devices, operating systems and the apps should be.
In terms of reviews and things like that?
Yeah, just in terms of what does good look like, and, you know, finding guidance, I suppose.
So is one of the hardest things that individual kind of software, so the individual pieces of software or hardware or whatever it might be, reviews. In terms of the general principles, have a look at our website. We've got stuff around the actual idea of what it is that you're trying to achieve. What we can't do, being government, and it is probably the hardest sticking point and the biggest criticism anyone will ever have of us, is that we don't go down to that device level, and that's because we can't promote or kind of not promote individual services. I would say, though, Charity Digital, the ones that they put on to the Charity Digital Exchange and things like that, they've gone through a pretty thorough vetting process. They know that they work, they know that they're good. So I would have a look and see what those kind of free or discounted bits of software are you can get first before you kind of go onto the open market as well.
Thank you.
Is there, have we got time for one more? Yeah, the gentleman there, yes, to the microphone.
It's kind of like related to the devices thing. It's about, you earlier talked about updates, and that's fine for like your desktop PCs, but a lot of phones in particular, you know, sort of like after, if it's an older device or a budget device, it might not have updates. So, I mean, I just want to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so it is a very difficult part of buying devices, is that they will go out of software. One of the best things I've read recently, Which Magazine have just done a whole load of reviews on how long things will stay in service for, and which are the better operating systems for staying in service. One of the things I didn't realize is some operating systems are significantly less good at maintaining that coverage in terms of updates than others. I won't name them here, but please do have a read of the Which article. If your devices are no longer in service, I appreciate that being charities, you can't just suddenly go, right, we're gonna replace 100 devices and sod the cost. It doesn't work like that. What you do need is a plan of how you're going to replace those, because what we saw, and I think WannaCry was a big wake-up call for a lot of organizations, is out of service and out of support pieces of software, devices, things like that, can have a really big operational risk to the organization. I mean, 300,000 devices were infected with WannaCry. When that happened, I think out of date is going to be a real problem, but making sure when you kind of look at your device and your software buying strategy, understanding and having a plan for how long that is going to be until it comes out of service or out of support, and what you're going to do towards the end of that. What we see is an awful lot of organizations using legacy systems that don't have any facility to update. And updates are genuinely like one of those top three things we would say you need to be able to do to be decently cyber secure.
Thank you very much.
That was fantastic. Thank you so much, Cov, for that incredibly insightful look at a bit of a scary topic. But thank you so much for breaking all of that down and providing all of us with some very useful tips and resources. Please do take a look at the brilliant resources that Cub mentioned, such as the board toolkit. I've made a note of that to pass that on to a lot of the boards that we work with. And I know there's lots of other resources on your site as well. So thank you so much, Cub.
Thank you.
And please can we give him a very big thank you.